Chapter 5. Our vacation instantly became a distant memory as the rest of us stood up and headed for the door. Freya was on the phone with the cruise line, directing them to send our baggage to my apartment instead of the travel agency where we had planned on retrieving it. As Irving opened the door, he stepped aside to let us out first.
"We are headed to the morgue," Irving said.
"The body has already made it to the morgue?"
I asked, surprised we weren't heading straight to the scene where the person died.
"Apparently, there was no indication of foul play, so the officer on scene had the body moved immediately. Tina's pretty shaken up, though," he replied.
"Tina?"
Freya whipped her head around to look at Irving.
"Why would Tina be shaken up?"
Tina Hoosier was the owner of the local apothecary shop. We'd had several experiences with her, the most recent of which involved the so-called necromancer murders. She had even been a suspect for a while. As it turned out, all she was guilty of was discovering a diamond mine and using the money from the stones to pay for her husband's cancer treatments. Since then, she had laid claim to the mine and joined forces with the other suspect from that case to create a tiny home community for relocated veterans. While she was strange, to say the least, the woman had a good heart. Irving pushed the door open a little further.
"The person in question dropped dead in her shop. Afterward, my people identified the body as one of the tourists from the unidentified ship. Do you have your van, or would you like me to take you to the morgue with me?"
"I left the van at my place. We'll ride with you," I told him. We piled in the large black SUV Irving had brought and made quick time getting to the local hospital where the body had been taken. Sadly, it was a place we were becoming well known at. At that point, the medical staff didn't even require us to have police escort to visit the place and gather information. That was one benefit of living and working in a small community. When we made it to the reception desk, tucked in the basement of the hospital, a young, heavyset girl we'd met before, most likely a college intern, greeted us.
"That was quick."
"Quick?" Irving asked, not bothering to introduce himself.
"Yeah,"
she replied.
"They only took the body, or at least the one I am assuming you're here to see, back about a half hour ago."
Gotcha, Irving mumbled, a scowl taking over his face. "A half hour is much too long. I'm going to have a talk with a few key people. I was left out of the loop on this for too long if the body was already removed and taken back."
The girl caught on to his irritation and toned down her bubbly demeanor.
"Well, head on back. I'll check you in."
Irving pushed open the heavy metal doors to our right, and the six of us entered the cold, sterile room of the dead. The place fascinated me, no matter how many times I'd been there. Most find a morgue creepy and solemn, but I found it intriguing. I didn't really even know why, other than death itself seemed to be the biggest mystery of all, one nobody was ever going to solve, and live to tell about it. Across the room, a medical assistant, clad in blue scrubs, gloves, and a face shield, turned when he heard the door open. It was Kevin Samuels, and we knew him well.
"Howdy, y'all! You're going to enjoy this,"
he greeted us happily. While Kevin came across a little morbid, he was one of the happiest people I'd ever met, and attributed that to having found work he loved. He walked to a nearby steel table with a bagged body lying on top. He reached for the zipper on the body bag, but stopped.
"You're going to want to grab some menthol and gloves."
A minute later, after we'd all smeared some menthol under our noses to block unpleasant odors and gloved up, Kevin opened the body bag. Every single one of us stood shocked, except Kevin, of course. Before us lay what I can only describe as a mummy of sorts. It was clearly a female human body, but shriveled beyond recognition. The skin was a bluish-yellow color, and was so desiccated that I could see the outlines of the bones underneath. I shook my head, realizing there must be some mistake.
"No, Kevin, we are here to see the body that was brought in about a half hour ago."
"Well, this is it," he replied with a smile. "Cool, huh?"
Veda moved closer to the body, leaning in to get a better view.
"Cool, perhaps. Technically impossible seems more like it, though. This body is completely... dehydrated, yes,"
Kevin interrupted.
"There is right next to zero fluid in the skin and muscle tissue from what I gleaned so far. But hey, check this out."
Kevin put a hand on the corpse's abdomen and pushed gently. A faint sloshing sound came from the body. He looked up and smiled.
The fluid is in the body, just not where it should be.
Veda repeated the motion Kevin did and looked up at him.
The fluid moved from the tissue to the abdominal cavity?
It appears that way. Of course, I won't know until the doc gets down here and we cut into it,
Kevin replied, excited to get the autopsy underway. Delaney moved to the top of the body and was staring at the face.
Why does she look so terrified?
We all shifted our attention to the corpse's face. Even though the skin was dried, which pulled the lips up from the gums and folded the eyelids back, we could see that Delaney was right. It was the way the body's mouth had opened and the eyes seemed to bulge that did the trick. The face looked like it had seen death before it became the victim. I looked up at Irving and raised a brow.
You said there was no foul play detected? This person looks like they were terrified to death.
Irving didn't answer, but looked to Kevin instead.
Can that happen?
Death by terror usually presents as a heart attack, aneurysm, and some other system-stopping ailment, he replied matter-of-factly. Again, we won't know the actual cause of death until the autopsy.
How long is the autopsy going to take? Freya asked, staying several feet from the body. And how the heck was this person identified as one of the tourists in that condition?
Kevin chuckled.
Ooh, that's something else. The condition continually worsened over the course of about 15 minutes after death, from what I was told. The police got to the scene in time to recognize her as someone taken from the boat in the harbor before she became unrecognizable.
I felt more than saw Irving's irritation, and I felt sorry for the poor sap who decided not to inform him earlier of all the details. He crossed his arms and huffed.
Good to know, even if it's after the fact, Irving grumbled. What is her name?
Janet Rust,
Kevin replied, glancing at the chart hanging from the metal table.
All right, Irving said. Thank you, Kevin. You call me, and I mean me, nobody else. First, once you have any further information.
Will do, and I'll let the doc know too, Kevin agreed with a smile.
We made our way out of the morgue after wiping the menthol from our faces and throwing away our gloves. Giving the young receptionist a quick nod, we made our way down the hall and out of the hospital in silence. It wasn't until we got back to the van that Sophie nipped at my ankle.
Did you smell that?
She sent to my mind. I shook my head and raised a brow to get her to tell me what she meant.
There was a scent of dried fruit, spoiled meat, and something else I couldn't identify, she told me. I almost wished I hadn't shifted, or that one of you would have thought to sport me some of that menthol.
Sorry,
I mouthed, opening the SUV door and stepping aside so she could jump in. Freya sat up front and turned to Irving as soon as he started the engine.
I take it we are off to talk to Tina, or do you need to go to the station first?
Tina first, Irving answered, pulling out of the parking lot. I can only imagine what kind of quack job mess of questions the responding officers asked her if they bothered to thoroughly question her at all.
Freya giggled.
Why don't you just gun for being chief of police so you can fix the irritations you have with your department?
Because then I wouldn't be able to do actual detective work,
Irving replied without pause.
I didn't become a cop to sit behind a desk.
Freya smiled and sat back in her seat. We all admired Irving's dedication to his job, even if he wasn't always the most fun guy to be around. The trip to the apothecary only took a few minutes. We parked across the street and waited for traffic to stop at the crosswalk. Then we made our way to the front door, which I pushed open and held for the others. Before I even made it inside, the scent of herbs and incense assaulted my nose. It wasn't unpleasant, just strong. Inside, the shop was littered with endless doodads and spiritual trinkets, all placed with the intention of dazzling the tourists. In reality, Tina was a true Wicca practitioner and only catered to outsiders to stay in business. Walking to the cashier desk, we saw Tina sitting on a tiny stool behind it, staring off into space blankly. I don't think she even heard us come in, despite the loud bell on the door.
Tina?
I said quietly, not wanting to startle her. She looked up slowly, her thick glasses sliding down on her nose.
Oh, hi.
She started to get up, but I put my hand up and gestured for her to remain seated. Her already thin frame seemed weak. She ignored me and stood anyway, tossing one of her long pigtail braids over her shoulder.
I'm fine, Tina assured me. What can I do for you?
As unpleasant as it may be, we need to talk to you about what you saw, Veda said softly. Tina's lips curled into a wimpy grin.
I figured I'd see you all after what I witnessed today.
Can you tell us what that was exactly? I prodded.
Sure,
she replied, lifting her hand to point at a spot across the room on the floor.
The girl came in, and I asked if I could help her with something. She just shook her head and started looking around. I went about my business, and the next time I glanced over, I was just in time to see her stop moving, like frozen in place. Then she dropped to the floor, turned a weird bluish color, and started, I don't know how to describe it other than aging, right in front of me.
We all turned to look where she pointed. Delaney walked over to the spot and looked back to Tina.
Here?
Yep,
Tina replied.
Just dropped dead.
Did she make any sounds? Veda questioned.
She was rambling a little,
Tina answered.
More like talking to herself in a whisper. But I couldn't hear what she was saying. I figured if she wanted me to hear, she would speak up.
Delaney looked around, turning in a circle to see what was around her.
This isn't anywhere near the herbs or candy. An allergy isn't really much of a possibility.
Veda crossed her arms.
What about the incense?
Not many people are allergic to incense that I know of, and definitely not to the point where it would kill them instantly,
Tina explained.
That was the worst part. I thought she just passed out until I made it over to her, and she was already withering.
Irving joined Delaney. Did she have anything with her?
Nope, not even a purse. Her pants didn't have pockets either. That is one of the reasons I didn't pay too much attention to her. She didn't appear to have a way to buy anything, so I figured she was just a looky-loo.
Freya leaned an elbow on the counter, her eyes scanning the room. Did she appear startled by anything?
Oh, you saw that too?
Tina replied.
I didn't see anything startle her, but she looked like she'd seen the devil or something.
Delaney looked around again.
I don't see anything from here where she was standing that could have induced a fright of any kind.
I glanced at the storefront. What about something out on the street? Maybe she was looking out of the window?
Nope,
Tina said.
She was facing the other direction when she collapsed.
Our eyes shifted to see what was opposite of the window. All that was there was a sunglasses rack and a small table with handmade voodoo-type dolls. Nothing too disturbing there, I noticed.
Well, shit, Irving grumbled. There is literally nothing here to give us any clue why an otherwise healthy-looking woman would croak on the spot.
You're telling me,
Tina said, her face drawn in sadness. There was something distraught in Tina's demeanor suddenly.
What is it? I asked her.
I didn't even try CPR,
she sighed as her shoulders fell.
Once I saw her and her condition, I was afraid to touch her. I couldn't see or hear her breathing, but I didn't even try. That's awful.
Delaney crossed the room and walked behind the counter to Tina.
It's not awful. It's self-preservation. You had no idea what was causing the problem and opted not to take the chance to expose yourself. There is nothing wrong with that in this situation.
Perhaps,
Tina muttered, shrugging weakly.
Why don't you close up for the day and go get some rest?
Delaney suggested. That sounds like a good idea, I added.
Nah,
Tina responded.
I can putter around here and keep my mind somewhat preoccupied if I need to. That's better than lying around replaying the whole thing in my brain over and over.
Irving returned to the counter and leaned towards Tina.
You know, we do have death counselors who work with the station if you'd like to talk to someone.
Tina giggled suddenly.
Death counselors? I'm not afraid of death. nor am I in need of mental assistance. Nobody seemed to know a thing about that girl. I am merely sad at how her life ended. That is all, but thank you.
Irving shrugged and took one more look around.
I guess that's all we need. We'll give you a call if we have any more questions. Let me know if you have any other details you remember.
Sounds good,
Tina replied, taking a seat on her stool once again.
I'm sorry you had to go through that, Delaney told her, bending down to give her a hug.
I appreciate that. Thank you,
Tina replied, hugging her back. We left Tina to sit with her thoughts and went back to the SUV. Irving put his arm on the center console and turned to address us.
I have to get back to the station and straighten some things out. There's not much more we can do until the autopsy comes back. Where would you like me to drop you?
My apartment, I answered. As the detective started the vehicle, I leaned back in my seat, eyes still on him.
What do you make of all this?
Irving shrugged as he pulled from the curb.
Zero things. I make sense of none of it yet. What I do know is that we should probably round up the other people from that ship, though, and do a health screening or something.
Veda perked up.
That's a great idea. Let me know when you get it set up, and I'll come to assist.
Sure,
Irving agreed as he drove us off. Soon, the girls and I were being dropped off at my apartment. We said our goodbyes to Irving, and he slowly drove away. 2 minutes hadn't passed since we made it inside before there was a knock at the door. I opened it to two bellboys with a rolling rack holding our luggage from the cruise.
Oh, thank you,
I told them, taking two of the suitcases and setting them inside the door. Freya went to her purse and grabbed her wallet, while the boys helped me unload the rest of the luggage into the apartment, which was a lot. Traveling with four females was a great way to get a backache, unless you have help, I decided. Once we had the bags unloaded, Freya tipped both the boys generously, and they left. I dropped down in my lounger and looked at the pile of bags by the door.
The last thing I feel like doing is unpacking right now, I muttered.
Sophie jumped up on the lounger across from me and turned around on the seat cushion a few times before laying down.
Don't worry about it. We can take care of it later, she said telepathically.
The other girls joined us in the living room, and we sat thinking for a few moments. Then Veda tipped her head a little.
Well, Irving was definitely onto something when he thought he may need us for this, she mused. What do we have so far?
Freya scoffed.
The shriveled corpse of a seemingly healthy woman from a stinky, weird ship.
Delaney kicked her feet up on the ottoman in front of her.
A hazmat team that is taking their time getting here, and a hurry up and wait on the autopsy.
Don't forget strangers ditching out on their Airbnbs, Veda added.
I smiled at the quick sum up.
All of that is interesting, yes, but still not much to go off of.
Veda stood up, went to the desk in the corner, and grabbed her laptop.
I'm going to start looking into what could possibly cause a body to wither like that. If nothing else, maybe I'll come up with some questions to ask the morgue after the autopsy is complete.
Dana stood as well.
Unfortunately, I have to get back to the sorority. There is a sister pinning tonight, and I feel like I need a shower all of a sudden.
Delaney was the house mother to her sorority. She had taken over after we'd uncovered that the original house mother was a local woman, a murderer who'd faked her own death and completely delusional. Now she ran the place and considered those pledged as part of her family.
I'm going to sit here and relax for a minute, I added. I didn't know that all that relaxation from our perfect cruise vacation could be swiped away in a matter of hours.
Same, Sophie told me. Nap time. Stupid sunrise idea.
She closed her eyes. I laughed and looked over at Freya.
What about you?
I'm going to go grab some groceries and cook lunch. It'll give me some busy work while I think through the minuscule amount of details we have.
Good deal, I said with a broad grin. Now that we have a plan, break!
It didn't take me long to end up joining Sophie in her idea to nap. The sudden switch from vacation to murder investigation, plus getting up for the sunrise, put me to sleep for several hours. By the time Delaney and Freya had returned and I woke up, it was dinner time, and I was starving. Freya cooked dinner for us with the groceries she'd planned on using for lunch, and then I wrote a short blog to get caught up with my fans. I hated that we didn't have more to go on as far as the case of the shriveled woman, but I needed to keep busy. By the time we all went to sleep that night, we were exhausted. I suppose 2 weeks on a ship in the sun without a care in the world made returning to a busy reality quite exhausting.